Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf. Welcome to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Today we're going to talk about dogs as not being just animals, but as being family members. And not just that, but really all the great things that dogs can do. But what can they do? We know we love them. We know we feel great when we pet them. We feel calmer. Our cortisol and our stress hormones all decrease. So we know all of these things. So basically, every kind of pet you can imagine, even fish, when we're watching tropical fish, right? We get relaxed. Every kind of pet that we deal with, especially we animal lovers deal with, is going to be a therapeutic animal for us, is going to be not just a companion animal, but an emotional support animal potentially if we have stress. And the rules and laws and regulations pertaining to those animals are very different than those of service animals, because service animals are recognized by the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990. So service animals as dogs or miniature horses only. Now, today we're not going to get into that, but what we are going to get into is, why do we have pets? Like, really think about it. They cost a lot of money. They break our hearts. And, you know, it's just tough sometimes. You can't go out. You can't do certain things. You got to get home for your pet. But to me, that's a lot less than I'd have to do for my own kids, right? Kids, you got to pay for everything, and you got to get the back talk. So instead of getting back talk, you have this animal who's trying its best to be everything you need. Now, it is expensive to have a pet, especially these days. You know, veterinary costs are going up the same way everything's going up. Hopefully, you know, things will change now this year and for the next several years. But either way, we have things that we can do to prepare. One of the things I want to talk about is the feelings that we get. Yes, we lose our dogs. And a lot of people lately, for whatever reason, have been reaching out to me, even emailing me pretty detailed stories about what's going on in their lives. And they're saying to me, you know, hey, it's heartbreaking. Like, I don't think I can open my heart again to another pet, to another cat, to another dog. And yes, it is really hard. But you also have to remember that we as humans chose to surround ourselves with lives that are even more temporary than our own. So we know when we get an animal, we know the chances are that we are going to survive and out-survive and outlive that animal. But to not have that animal in our lives, and the richness and the joy and the companionship and the understanding and literally enriching every aspect of our lives, that's what makes it worth it. You know, when you've got a dog who has a disease or a cat who has an illness, yes, it's heartbreaking. But listen, that happens to all of us. You know, when our parents get older, our children, God forbid, get sick. People in general, and I'm going to throw this out there, women more so, we give our hearts to everyone who needs it sometimes. We don't give them to ourselves. We don't take care of ourselves at the expense of ourselves. We take care of animals, other people in our lives. But I do want to ask all of you, why did you get that first pet? And yes, it's terrible. I mean, and I've lost a bunch of mine, especially in the last few years. I've had animals that were almost worse, like one of my horses was almost worse than losing my own parents. And I don't mean that my parents weren't devastating losses, but we love our animals so unconditionally. And when you do have that once-in-a-lifetime pet, it doesn't mean that if you get another one, that you're going to have the same pain, that you're going to go through that horrible heartache. But think about that, you know, hopefully 8, 10, 12, 14 years of joy, of exuberance, of having that individual animal know you and just look at you, and everything seems so much better and less complicated and less painful. Animals get us through losing people. Animals get us through losing other animals. But the biggest thing is, animals enrich our lives. It doesn't matter what kind of animal we look at. And we need to think about that and open our hearts
I am also certified in pet loss and bereavement counseling. One of the things that I go over with my people, my families, when they lose an animal, whether it's an animal that has come into their lives through rescue or that they purchased it or it showed up at their doorstep, every animal comes into our lives for a specific reason. Maybe we needed to learn a lesson. Maybe we needed to learn something about ourselves. I'm going to tell you a little story about one very nice lady that I met about 4 months ago. And she has a wonderful, wonderful dog named Rolo. I'm not going to give you her name. That's not that uncommon of a dog's name. But I'm going to tell you something. I think dogs and animals come into people's lives for a reason. And sometimes those animals manifest behaviors that we might not like. But a lot of times it's because of us. They feel what we feel. They're empathetic. They feel when we're stressed. And their stress comes out in a different way. So where we might pace, walk around fast, get on the phone and talk really fast to our friends, call everybody, clean our house, overclean our house, go for a drive, do some work, go for a run, go to the gym. Those dogs don't have, and cats, but especially with dogs, they don't have a way of getting that energy out. So sometimes we see behaviors that are really, I'm not saying caused by the family, but that are exacerbated by it. So for instance, if you're under a lot of stress, your life is changing, you have issues in your home, and you are stressed and you're hugging your animal, or you're petting your animal, or you're even in the same house as your animal, they can very often tell that you're under extreme stress. Now, why is that an issue? Because we have dogs who chew, who have separation anxiety, who even get aggressive. And those behaviors are not always because of the dog. The dog doesn't necessarily want to do those or exhibit those behaviors, but the dog does, because he's absorbing all the stress from the home. A lot of times you'll see dogs 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, never had a bite history, never growled at anybody. And I'm not talking about dogs who have a physical issue where they have a bad patella, they need surgery because they came from a backyard breeder or of somebody who breeds mixed breed designer dogs who didn't care about health because they just wanted the money. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about dogs that are just good dogs, whether they came from a pet store or they came from a rescue or from a grand champion show breeder of merit, it doesn't matter. These dogs, some of them, depending on the breed, the age, the gender, some of these dogs actually exhibit these behaviors because they're absorbing what's around them. Where do I see as a behaviorist the highest propensity and preponderance of behavioral issues? Besides puppies, right? I see it in people who too quickly replaced a dog in their home. I see it in people who have a very elderly dog who is kind of not doing great and they go and get a puppy. I see it in people who've had a recent loss of a family member. I see it in the animals of these people. I see a lot of them with people who are going through a breakup or are going through a difficult time in their lives. And all of a sudden, these pets that they had, especially dogs, start having behavioral changes. Now, is that the dog or is it the situation? Well, going back to this young dog, Rolo, this dog is truly amazing. He could be a service dog so easily. But he was exhibiting very protective, not aggressive, but protective behaviors, very dominant behaviors, and behaviors that you would expect of a much older dog and much more of a dominant breed older dog. Well, through the last several months, since I went to the family's home and we worked together, Rolo has turned into just a wonderful dog. He's still under a year old, but almost all these behaviors he was exhibiting have changed and disappeared. So now all the behaviors that are left are the good ones. And this is because we start in what I do and what we do is to help families to understand how their behavior affects the dog's behavior. Their energy affects their dog's energy. So if the dogs are having behavioral issues, very often it's not the dog, it's the situation around the dog. Now, this doesn't mean that, oh, there's no such a thing as a bad dog. Oh, yeah, there are such a thing. There is such a huge thing as bad dogs. Not every dog is good. Like, not every person is good. But the vast majority, you know, talking well into the upper 90th percentile of dogs are behavioral issues that came from something either traumatic or bad that happened during that dog's either recent or past history. And the other thing is that a lot of times these dogs are picking up on the energy of the home. So when somebody is displaced, and we have this unfortunately, and I want to extend my condolences and listen, if there's a way I or any of our audience is able to help you, the fires, the floods. I've been watching a lot of political channels just to see what's going on because I really am so heartbroken for all these people in California, all these people in the Carolinas, all Midwest, like all over this country. And I think part of the thing that I'm hopeful of is that we're going to start taking care of our own people and offering services to our own citizens who are going through these horrible, horrible times. And, you know, everybody says, oh, it's, you know, the people who have a lot of money can afford to rebuild. And, you know, they probably will buy out, you know, places from people who couldn't afford to rebuild. And that's horrible. But, you know, just because somebody has something doesn't mean that it's less painful for them. A lot of these people lost pets. They either don't know where the pets are or the pets are just, you know, unfortunately perished. And, you know, I don't care if you're a multi-billionaire or if you don't even have a checking account. The problem is our hearts don't know how much money we have. Our hearts hurt just as much when someone who has like a billionaire loses a child or loses a pet. Guess what? They feel that same thing that we feel and that people with nothing feel. But you know what? A lot of times the people with nothing need those pets even more because those pets are helping them to get through difficult times. I mean, I love, there was a TV commercial years ago where they showed a little boy playing with his little black lab puppy. And it was the cutest thing. And this little boy looked like a little cute Dennis Menace kind of thing. He was adorable. And then it showed him going off for his first day of school. And then it showed him going to a, you know, football game or soccer game, whatever. And then it showed, you know, him graduating high school. And then it showed him getting married or, you know, engaged. And then the dog was gone. How are you going to tell me that I don't care who you are, when you have something, an animal, a pet, a dog, especially with the loyalty they have, you're not going to tell me that that individual isn't going to have excruciating pain from losing that pet? So I believe every dog is an emotional support dog. I believe for some people, cats can be absolutely emotional support and can be helpful to them. And again, even tropical fish, maybe you don't get as quite emotionally involved because you can't put them in your pocket or throw them in the car and go to a fish park. But other than that, you know, they're offering you something. And the biggest thing is you're not alone. You know, why do we not want to talk to people when we're having a bad day? We don't want to have to hear what they say. If you could just vent to like a plastic dummy or a photo on the wall, and just pretend and just say everything and not have to hear an answer back. It kind of reminds me of when Carrie in Sex and the City was coming home and she was with Aiden, the guy Aiden character. And she loved him, but she would say to him, when I come home from work, it's not that I don't love you. I just need to hear nothing. I need to be by myself and I need to just have a few minutes for myself. Can we please do that? Most humans are not capable of it, as we all know. So think about what we get from a dog or from a cat. Those animals, you know, we always say, if only my animal could talk. No, you'd be divorced. They call it an ex-husband or an ex-girlfriend or an ex-boyfriend, because that's why we don't gravitate towards humans very often, when we just want to be left alone. Well, we don't want to be left alone from our animals. We just want to be left alone from other humans. So think about the benefits of having this animal, even though you might have lost one before. You don't have to replace the animal, but you can help to resecure the feeling you had that you had the animal. So in other words, yes, it's not going to be the same animal, and you're not going to ever replace that. Nothing and nobody can be truly replaced. Everything can be just tiny bit different or vastly different. But what you can do is replace the feeling that you had, the emotional tie, the feeling that, you know, it is going to be okay. So, for instance, if you had, let's say, I'm just going to throw it out there. You had a dog that, let's say, a black lab, and it lived for 14 years. And you say, I'm not going to go through that again. I can't. Like my friend's dog, Dylan, who was like literally the best black lab on the planet, great dog. They didn't want to replace him, but they wanted to continue to have that beautiful feeling of companionship, of love, of unaccepted, or should I say, of unaccepted loving, like unconditional, but where you don't have to give back, right? Where it's not that reciprocity. I don't have to talk to somebody and say, and do some a favor for them. I don't have to do something in return. Because that's what we love about animals, is the fact that they give everything. They ask so little. So when you have an animal who has a behavioral issue, or who, you know, you lose and you're heartbroken over, try to work it out as if we were working it out with a close friend or with a child, even though we may not agree on everything. We have to try it. So I'm just asking for those people who reached out to me over the past 40 years, I'm asking you all, if you can't make that choice that, okay, I'm going to adopt again, I'm going to purchase again, I'm going to have an animal. If you can't make that choice, okay, maybe you can foster, maybe you can hook up with a good rescue. And see, even volunteering at the shelter, you know, near you. Get involved with a small to mid-sized rescue, because they need help. And then maybe, just maybe, you can have an animal at your home. You can help that animal, and you can open your heart just little by little. And who knows, maybe it'll even be a foster fail someday, meaning you wind up adopting the dog you fostered. But what I will say is that it is just so important to maybe not get that exact feeling, but to be able to have the feeling that you enjoyed with that pet for so long. It's not replacing the original, because we cannot replace any one of you listening or any pets or animals or anything we've ever had. Nothing truly replaces something that we feel that we lost. But what we can do is to relive and revisit the feeling that we got when we had that animal. And that's something that I think everybody out there can understand and can sympathize and empathize with. We are going to go to a quick break, and we will be right back with some wonderful information on how to play with your dog, food, treats, and toys, and all kinds of cool stuff, and a little bit more about how to keep your dog healthy. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Okay, well, welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Well, we talked a little earlier about dogs having jobs and the feeling that we have of what we do and what we love about our pets. And I think one of the things that we need to discuss today is about food and treats and toys and all those things, the controversy grain-free versus things with grain, because these are really all important parts of keeping our animals here for us longer and healthier. Listen, if you have an animal who is in pain and who is ill or is nauseous or is having issues, and just, we know there are times that we just know no matter what we've done, we've come to the end of that rope. And I'm probably worse than anybody on the planet with that, because all my pets are insured, every one of them. Every single one of them, if they get sick or if they, God forbid, have cancer or anything that happens, I go to the wall for my pet. But what I will not do is have them living only for me and for what my needs are. So I don't want them to be suffering because I can't deal with losing them. And I think a lot of people do that, unfortunately. We have to realize that these animals have given us everything, and they've put their trust in us. They've put their faith in us. They've given us everything they've got. And sometimes we just have to be strong to let them go into a way better place than where we are, so that we can move forward, never forgetting who they were or what they did for us, but keeping that inside. And one of the things that I always tell people when they're, you know, have an older pet or a pet who's ill, is what can we do better next time? How can we make the next time even better? It's kind of like having a relationship and you say, it wasn't really great, it wasn't terrible, but we move on and hopefully we learn from it. One of the things I want all of you to learn is that what you feed the dogs, what you give them even for treats, how you play, how you deal with them, how you train or teach them, and it's a big difference, training versus teaching, all of those things can help your animals to live longer. I know people think I'm like, hey, wait a minute, how is that possible? The games I play with my dog can make my dog live longer? Yeah, I'm going to explain why. So food, treats, even the water you're giving to your dogs, your pets, water. Number one, should never be tap water. Never. Now, you shouldn't let your dog drink out of a stream either, because although it might be okay, there can be a lot of parasites, bacteria, and all kinds of fungal things, depending on the time of year, where you are. Now, I'm not saying never, never, because you might live up in the Adirondacks where, you know, the water is incredibly clean and it's been filtered and it's pure. But I know the town that I have one of my homes in. I know that town has terrible water. They even send us notices not to drink the water. Do not drink in it. And they even tell you, you know, you can bathe in it, but, well, if I'm bathing in it and it's on my skin, I'm probably not going to want it. If I'm not drinking it, I'm not going to want to put it on my body. So, you know, hey, you can water your lawns with it. Well, that's great. But even traveling from location to location, a lot of times I hear with my private patients that these animals are, trying to tell us things, but they can't tell us things, unfortunately, because, they don't speak. But they can tell us things with their bodies. Now, I said that some of the things that we do can cause our animals health issues. Well, water. First of all, we should always, always, always use either filtered or bottled water for our dogs, for you too. And there are some great filters out there. I'm not plugging any particular one. I have a couple of different types. You can get them under your sink for probably like $100, $150. And then replacement filters are what, $20 to $50. But they go for like 2,000 gallons. Well, you should be using that too, but filtered or bottled water, you have less exposure to toxins, to chemicals, to parasites, to lead, to chlorine, right? You know, we put the water is chlorinated to keep it clean. It's also fluoridated. A lot of water, they added fluoride for the kids so the kids' teeth were stronger, except that fluoridated toothpaste is much more effective, and we don't need fluoride all through our bodies. Dogs cannot process and metabolize the same way we can. So, like, for instance, dogs can't, because they don't, they're carnivores, right? They're not omnivores who eat everything, or herbivores who eat only plants. They can't really digest and break down a cell wall. So if you're giving your dog raw vegetables, they can't really process it because they can't break down the cell wall. They can only break down the cell membrane, which is in plants and in animals. But animals don't have a cell wall. They only have the cell membrane. So let's say, for instance, you're giving your dog tap water. It doesn't mean your dog's going to die and he's not going to live to 17. And let's say you're feeding the garbagiest garbage food, cheap crap with everything in it. It doesn't mean you're killing your dog. But it's the same thing as the 100-year-old lady who's been drinking her whole life and smoking. She lives to 100. And then she dies and people say, oh my gosh, like, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're doing because she lived to 100. But how do you know she wouldn't have lived to 110 if she didn't smoke and drink? And, you know, there are things like that. So we have to look at what are things that we can do to extend and prolong our dog's life. Well, one thing is the water. So again, think about that, getting a filter or, you know, even one of those over the, you know, like a pitcher type of a filter, something like that, so that your dog is not ingesting things that are not good for it. And when you go away, you can either take water or buy bottled water. It's almost any bottled water. You can do a little research depending on where you live, but it's so important. Now, one of the other things that we're going to talk about is the difference of foods. Foods depend on the age, the type of dog very often. Even though a lot of it is marketing ploy, like, oh, look, Mabel, our dog is on the front of that food. Look, we should buy it because that's what that looks like. Our dog looks just like that. That's just marketing. But there are some breeds of dogs and even sizes of dogs. Smaller dogs can get away with having a higher protein diet than a large dog. A small breed puppy can have more protein when it's young and growing than a large breed dog who can get panosteitis or growth plate deformities because it's eating too much protein and growing too fast. So yes, there are absolutely inherent differences between small and large, young and old, animals who might have an issue with their digestive tract. But I'm here to tell you today that one of the biggest problems in our dog's lives is stress. Going back to the dog I started talking about, all right? When you get stressed, just think about it. You're having a shakeup at work. You're not sure if you're going to get fired. You're not sure if you're going to get moved. You have somebody with a health issue, a parent, a child, a sibling, a friend who's going through something. Do you not get like kind of digestive upset sometimes? Do you not have a feeling of stress in your chest when things are going on around you? And does that not over time create health issues, short or long term? You know, your digestive tract moves too quickly, you get diarrhea. You might gain weight because you have so much stress that your cortisol is boosting up. So now you're not only feeling like you have a panic attack constantly, but you're also having more of a tendency to gain weight around your middle, right? Well, animals are the same way. So when you guys are having an argument in front of your dog, or you guys are slamming doors, or you're having, you know, way too much information for that would be even for children, but the dogs are picking it up, that can actually harm them. That can detract from their quality of life and their length of life, because over time, the more stress, whether it's humans or animals, are under, the more likely they are to have diseases and, you know, be less strong from the standpoint of immunities. So you know, when you get run down, our parents always used to say, you know, well, you know, if you keep doing that, or you go outside with a wet head, or you keep doing that, you're going to get all stressed. You're going to get yourself sick. And you know what? They were right. Just like we should be telling our kids. So if you're feeling a little off, yes, okay, if it's the Olympics and you've been working for your whole life for that 2.5 minute moment, okay, yes, so you power through that. But as a general rule, what I see as a general is that animals, especially dogs, tend to try to kind of help you and lessen that feeling for you. So even though they're under stress, we don't really see it until it either manifests in a health issue or perhaps manifests in a behavioral issue. So you might have a dog that has allergies, and the allergies may be only partially from what it's eating or exposed to. It may be that the dog's own immunity has dropped, and that's why suddenly your dog is getting hot spots or itching or allergies or a bad stomach or pancreatitis. It's not always just the food or just the water or just the physical aspect, but very often the stress. And if you don't believe me, you tell me how you felt, what your stomach felt like the night before you took your first SAT or your boards or whatever test you had to take or your finals. Not too many people would be telling me, oh yeah, I was totally fine. Now, I was fine because I love taking tests and I was always the smart kid. So I didn't have that problem. But SATs, I didn't get stressed. But I can tell you times in my life when I did get stressed because it was something, getting the results back of medical tests, finding out that one of the animals was sick, and all of a sudden your stomach and your gut are just tearing up and you got bloating and gas, and now you get your own belly, you got diarrhea, you got health issues, you don't feel well, you know, you can't sleep at night. Well, animals, it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing, except we can express, hey, I don't feel well. Hey, that is stressing me out. But you know, dogs don't do that. Dogs don't talk, which is why we love them so much. Like I said, otherwise we'd call them exes. So if the dog can have physical manifestations such as diarrhea, I don't know, randomly he's got diarrhea just once in a while. Could it be that he ate something outside? Absolutely. But could it be that there was a very stressful event for a day or 2 days or 3 days or four, and it finally just got gnarled into his digestive system, or he suddenly, his immune system dropped and now he's more susceptible to cancer that he could have potentially fought off before? That's why we have to look at dogs and cats and all animals as stresses, as what are the stresses on these animals? Because a lot of them are trying to help us so that we're less stressed. But what are we doing for our animal? So what can you do to reduce the stress on your pet? Well, one of the things you can do is to change how you behave around your dog and to change what you do and how you do things, such as walking them, feeding them, playing with them, not giving them so many treats that they become obese, not letting them get too heavy because it's not good for humans. It's definitely not good for dogs. And especially those of you with young puppies, don't let your puppy get fat. And I'm not fat shaming puppies, but, you know, puppy belly is one thing. But I just saw a dog. It was just turning 6 months old. This dog had to be 15 to 20 pounds overweight. Now, it's a mastiff. It's a larger dog. But I'm telling you, this thing could have lost 15, 20 pounds. Sweet dog. But the problem with that is excess weight is no good for anyone, right? So what does it have? It causes knee issues. It causes, with a dog, especially one that's not particularly well-bred and that nobody's checked for patellas and done the right things breeding-wise. So it can be the patellas, which is like the CCLs. A lot of you guys might be shaking your head yes and going like, yeah, I had that on my dog. And then once you have the first one, the second one is usually not far behind. And other things like digestive issues, other things like stresses that we don't even think about. A dog suddenly starting to bark at people, dogs suddenly starting to growl, to lunge, to focus and hyper-focus on things that he never cared about before. When animals get stressed, unlike humans, animals can't express that to us in words. So they express it to us in their behaviors and in what we see from them. So when you have, let's say you're playing tug of war, for instance, I have heard a lot of local dog trainers or wannabe dog trainers, and they'll be like, oh yeah, you should play tug of war, but make sure you always win so that the dog knows that you're the alpha. Well, first of all, that's pretty dumb. Okay. I don't know what Ivy League college you went to, but that's not what I learned. And what is even more important is I've learned from tens of thousands of dogs. I've learned from being a breeder of grand champion, beautiful, healthy show dogs that live 15 years, 16, 17 years for large breed dogs. I care that you get that next puppy from me when your dog passes at 15 because he was running and playing and he just died. Not that he was sick from the time he was 2 or 3 years old or from the time you got him. We have to, as a society, care more. So why is it bad to, let's say, how does that cause my dog stress when I'm playing tug of war? Because it's the same thing as if you put your pink slip, for those of you who don't know that, that's the old, in the 50s, it's basically the title to your car, and they would race, right? The kids would race, and they'd put one hot rod against the other, and winner takes all. Why would you, if you put all your time and money into your vehicle, why would you even offer that? Like, oh, okay, if I lose this one time, if I lose, I'm going to lose this vehicle that I put my heart and soul into. And the answer is you shouldn't, or you wouldn't, I hope. Well, tug of war in a dog's mind is you saying to him, challenge me. Now, the fact that these local dog trainers or people or wherever you are on the internet, and like chat rooms where people are not veterinarians or behaviorists and they're offering advice, which I advise you not to listen to people who do not have some kind of credentials, and I don't mean some stupid credential they made up, but an actual credential, or they graduated with animal behavior from college, from a good college. You know, the problem is that an animal doesn't look at it as, oh, you always win. They look at it as we are arguing. And as long as that animal is able to feel that he is at least in the game, even though he doesn't win, which most of you let them go, or the dog pulls it out of your hand and there you go, those animals are going to think, ah, okay, you're teaching me, like a mama dog or wolf would teach the cubs or the pups how to fight and how to pull a carcass away from another competitor so that they could eat. You see where I'm going on this? That is not a good thing to teach your animals. Doesn't mean you can't play fetch outside. Doesn't mean you can't play with your dog tossing things outside. Doesn't mean he can't chew on a bone or on a bully stick or something inside. But first of all, if your dog is hyper inside, why would you want to play and get him amped up inside so you're telling him, oh, this is the gymnasium as well as the library? No, inside the house is the library. We're calm. We don't throw things. Your kids aren't allowed to throw footballs in your dining room near grandma's china, right? Or near a very expensive collection of sports memorabilia. They're not allowed to play. But you're letting your animal, especially your dog, learn that it's okay to play because this is the gymnasium. And then you get upset with him when he's running around when people come over and grabbing toys and tossing toys. You taught him that. This is where it is your fault, not your fault, but the proverbial you and your. So tug of war teaches the same way as if you have a child and your husband pushes the little boy, 3 years old, pushes him and says, God, push me back. And then the boy pushes him back. And then the dad pushes, and then the kid pushes. Well, now take that fast forward 15 years. Now you have an 18-year-old son who's punching his father because he doesn't respect him because dad taught him all these years that it was okay. And not only it was okay, I expect you to challenge me. Well, with a dog, you can't say, hey, son, that wasn't the way to go. That's when people call me and say, please help us. I know we did everything wrong or we did a lot of things wrong, but please help us. So why does it matter? And I'm just using that, playing tug or wrestling with them. It doesn't mean every dog, but you don't know how your kid's going to grow up, right? You don't know how your dog's going to grow up. So don't assume that it's always the dog's fault. Now, why is that a problem? When you are playing tug and you're wrestling, you're teaching the animal to challenge you. Clearly, you are not in charge if you're teaching somebody else to also be in charge. Dogs need clarity. They need to understand that whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But whatever it is, you're the mom. You're the dad. You're the one providing for their needs and protecting them and taking care of them. So that they then understand that they don't have to do a job like growling at somebody, nipping at somebody, snarling, staring at things, looking out the window, sitting on a high bed or chair or the back of the couch by the window so they can watch everything. And those behaviors, not just the one, but with a few other little glitches in there, that things that you might be doing wrong, like free feeding and things like that, gives your dog and the absolute mistaken impression that he is in charge. So what are we missing here? We're missing the fact that we're creating behavioral issues. And over time, a dog who feels that he has to provide for this family, protect them, guard over everything, and do all those jobs is going to be more stressed over a long period of time than if he very simply was just the dog. Same way your kids don't need to know how much the mortgage is that you're paying, or your property taxes, or your homeowner's insurance, or how much gas costs, or the car that goes with the gas. Why would your five-year-old need to know that? But the dog, it's that kind of same thing. The dog is feeling that it is doing all those jobs for you. And in the dog world, and in a lot of animals with the animal world, whoever is doing those items, who's watching out, who's protecting, who's allowed to go onto a high location, who's allowed to have, you know, everybody walks around, and we're going to go into this in future weeks. The dogs actually look at it as they should and say, oh, I guess I must be in charge. Or at least I'm like co-in charge, like I'm co-parenting. But in reality, they should be co-parenting because they're not parents or co-parents. They're the kid. So over time, the feeling and stress of some dogs, what they're going through, is going to give that feeling to them that they are in charge. And unfortunately, what happens with that is over time, the animals can develop pancreatitis from stress. Now, it's not just that, but that's a huge contributor. They can develop behavioral issues. They can develop allergies and itching and hot spots because their immune system is being damaged slowly over time. If you look at any studies on stress and the sweet dog Rolo is like the sweetest chilled dog now because the mom and dad, they're wonderful people. Mom and dad both realized with our class and our time together that he was confused. And in a very short time, they were able to change it. And this is what I do. This is what I have done for so many years, like decades, like unfortunately more decades than I'd like to admit to, but decades. And this is where when you are training a dog to do a trick, you're not changing his brain, you're changing his body position. When you do obedience, it doesn't give you a well-behaved dog, it gives you an obedient dog. A well-behaved dog comes from, like a well-behaved child, a dog who knows that he's not in charge, he doesn't need to worry about it, and that he doesn't own anything. If you don't own anything, what are you going to protect? It's like your child. Your child doesn't own your house. Your child didn't pay for the house or the food or the care or the clothing. but your child's allowed to use that. I would love to be able to go back to when I was a kid. We didn't have to worry about how much food was, how much gas cost, how much a house cost, how much rent was, or how much, you know, anything was. All we had to do was get good grades in school, right? That was it. And now, and then go play. And, you know, looking back at it, remember when we were all little kids and we're like, I can't wait to be a grown up so that I can do what I want and I can tell everybody else what to do. How'd that all work out for us? Really, how'd that work out? I know I love my life, but man, there's a lot of stresses in life. There's a lot of things that having to pay for things and having to help people and having that responsibility. And why do we want to do that to our dogs? Why do we want to give them all that extra responsibility? We should be shouldering that. We brought them into our lives, not the other way around. They didn't ask to be in this situation. And they love us so much that sometimes they become a little overprotective or they become a little frightened and they react to things. And unfortunately, that's why a lot of dogs are euthanized. So, or rehomed. Going to give you another quick break. We're going to talk very briefly about a couple of other things with spay and neuter and relating to weight. And we will be right back. Stay tuned for another about 5 minutes of brilliance. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Today we're going to continue with talking about our dogs and our dogs' bodies and stresses and all those things. We're going to talk about overweight versus underweight and how it's related very often to spay-neuter and how that is also related to health. If you have a dog that's already been spayed or neutered, you know, we can't change it, right? But if you have any option, and I advise you strongly to speak with your veterinarian and to speak with, if it is a breeder, like a legitimate, reputable breeder, speak with your breeder. Because the problem also happens, especially with animals who are coming out of situations of great stress, like rescues or shelters. Typically what will happen is they'll spay. Some of these rescues and shelters are spaying dogs, puppies at 6 weeks, 5 weeks, 8 weeks. All God put in to us was growth hormones and different catalysts in our bodies that create different reactions and different results in different parts of our bodies. So when we spay or neuter an animal too young, and I'm talking about even 6 months is too young very often, most of the time. What's happening is all their bones and muscles, especially their thickness, if you would, changes. Because when you take out the growth hormone, the sex hormones, the testosterone and the estrogen that are what is there to mature our bodies, now not just sexually, but physically, when you spay or neuter your pet, really, really young, or somebody does that, there are things you got to watch out for because the hormones are there to strengthen and thicken the bones, the tendons, the ligaments, the muscles. So I see a lot of, I'm just going to throw it out there, doodles of whatever sort and mixed breeds that people also spay and neuter very young, and they have a lot of issues with their bones. They have a lot of issues even with their organ systems, lungs, heart, having patellas replaced, having bad hips that don't develop right. It's so important for the hormones that are supposed to be in their bodies to actually be in their bodies at a certain time. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to let your female go through six heats and get pregnant, or that she has to even go through the first. But you should speak with your personal veterinarian if you don't like, you know, if you just go into some local, you know, clinic that you don't know who it is, that's fine. But then reach out to whoever you got the dog from, if it's a good breeder, good show breeder. If not, there are forums. And listen, you guys, you can even reach out to us at PAW Behavioral, P-A-W-B-E-H-A-V-I-O-R-A-L, PAW Behavioral. dogs@gmail.com. That's one of our email lines. You can go on to many different websites that will tell you the legit information, especially some of the medical websites. They are finding now that early spay neuter is leading or has led to a lot of health issues, temperament issues, et cetera. Let me tell you, health-wise, yes, there are a lot of things, but we don't have enough time to go into everything. But when you spay and neuter young, especially if the animal is going through a fear phase or is kind of a softer temperament animal, and now all of a sudden you take out all the hormones that were going to give it confidence, whether it's the estrogen that tends to soften them or the testosterone that tends to make them a little tougher. If you take the testosterone out of a fearful or kind of shy puppy, he's going to, chances are, become more shy, because it's the same reason that little kids cry more easily. Now, it's not just that they learn through life, don't cry, but it's more emotional. They have to learn things, and things hurt them more because they don't understand it. So when you spay or neuter a dog, and now it doesn't have the hormones that kind of make it mature enough so that it has more adult experiences, such as learning that men with hats are not so bad. Men with beard aren't going to all kill them. Yes, there are reasons we've talked about before, and we'll talk about certainly in the future, why particular experiences might lead to more issues behaviorally. But the point being, physically, it creates issues when we spay and neuter very, very young, because they don't develop mentally, behaviorally, and emotionally the same way that they need to. So, you know, I do want you to consider that and think about that and talk with people who believe in that. And the other thing, let's go back quickly physically. One of the main things, anytime you're spaying or neutering very young, if the dog already has a little bit too much weight, they're going to tend after the spay or neuter to pack on pounds. So when you have a puppy, don't be so worried about making this puppy this big, fat, round thing. You want to keep him a little on the lean side, not skinny, but a little on the lean side where you can just see the ribs, the back ribs, not all the ribs. And that when the dog turns to the side, you kind of see the ribs a little bit. You shouldn't see like hip bones or anything unless it's on a Saluki, Sluffy, Afghan or Greyhound type dog, because that's in the breed standard. But you should see a little, like just barely on, like a little less on a scale of 1 to 9. It should be a 5 or a 4.5. You don't want them to be too heavy, because then they'll tend to pack on pounds and have a weight issue a lot of times. Also, it affects the thyroid and it affects the other glands and the other organs when we spay and neuter young. So again, I'm going to tell you, talk to your veterinarian, talk to your breeder, talk to somebody who knows and can guide you accordingly, because even the veterinary professionals, like veterinarians and the organizations from which they're certified or the organizations they belong to, have decided, a lot of them are saying like, wow, spay neuter at 6 months is too young. And I agree. Well, oh my goodness, I don't know how this happens all the time that we start talking and then it's the show's over. I could go on endlessly, but then again, you know, I wouldn't be a dog, right? I'd be a human. So I'm going to leave you all with this. I hope that you all have a wonderful, wonderful, healthy, and safe week, month, year, lifetime. Long life with your dog, with your pet, with your family. And just take care of yourself and realize how blessed you are to have what you have and to be where you are with whom you are right now. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, and God bless.